live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Hi, everyone, and we're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show and the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook. And I'm really excited to have a really quick interview, but such a honor to have on the program Emmy Award winner Dan Bukatinski, James Novak on the ABC hits drama Scandal. Dan, thanks for calling.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
I'm really excited, and I know that you have something that you have another guest with us today, and we're going to talk about something that is that you have, which is celiac disease, and yeah. You're here to inform us about that. So tell us who else we have on the line.
Well, about 7 or 8 years ago, after my father passed away, I was diagnosed with celiac disease, which is an autoimmune disease that makes wheat gluten, which a lot of people don't realize is in wheat products and a lot of other products like soy sauce and many others. It literally makes your antibodies in your body attack itself. And the only way to fight it is to eat a completely clean and simple gluten-free diet, which I didn't even know what it was at the time. Completely stressful. But I was introduced very early on to products and simple foods like a Lara bar, and that's what Lara's here, who created it out of just 3 ingredients. I'm telling you, like, anytime there's more than 3 or 4 ingredients on any package, I have to run.
Oh, that's fantastic. So, Lara, how are you? Lara Merkin. I'm really excited to talk to you as well, and how this is able to help people with celiac disease and also people that are looking for gluten-free products. Tell us a little about it.
Oh, hi. Good morning, Neil. Thanks for having us. When I created Lara Bar, my goal was to make something that tasted indulgent and delicious, but it was made of very simple and gluten-free ingredients, just fruit, nuts, and spices. So one of Dan's favorites is cherry pie, and there's just 3 simple ingredients in there: almonds, cherries, and dates. That's it.
And you came up with this whipping up like a Cuisinart.
Well, I got inspired on a hike one day in the Rocky Mountains a little over 10 years ago, and I thought, why hasn't somebody made something indulgent and delicious, but it's really made of whole foods and good for us?
Well, as a celiac, you get so tired of eating stuff that tastes like mulch, and these are so. This was like real food. It tasted like you were having dessert, and it has energy in it. And I'm a dad, so I'm always feeding my kids and trying to come up with desserts that aren't so brownie-like.
Well, and I got my inspiration from pies and cookies and cakes, but just using fruit, nuts, and spices.
Awesome.
That was my intention.
You know, it's amazing, Dan, is that the fact is when you're, you know, filming and doing all these different things that you do, you need to have that quick on to grab a bar really quickly, especially and so that you keep to your diet.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. And also, I was juggling, like, I have very small kids at home, and I certainly have been ever since I've been acting on the show. And at Scandal, there's, you know, you go to the craft service table, and it's all bagels and croissants and peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And you're so psyched when there's something very simple and delicious that you can have, and you don't feel like you're depriving yourself. And I'm always putting bars, Lara bars, in my bag. I used to put them in the diaper bag, the compartment of my car, and they're on set. So that is definitely an added bonus.
So you must be really excited for Dan to be speaking about this, Lara, especially having someone as an Emmy Award winner to be on to help promote your product.
Well, it's a true honor, and again, my intention was to make this product really great and good for a lot of different people with special diets, but also people that just want to simply eat healthy.
Right.
And it's wonderful that it reaches out to so many different people.
Well, I'm glad to have you both on the show. I know everyone needs to go check out your Facebook.com Lara Bar page and also www.larabar.com to find out more information on you, and we all could check out Dan on Scandal and much, much more. So I appreciate you guys both coming by to take time to talk about it. And for people that are dealing with celiacs, they need to really look for an alternative by having this bar so that they can stick to their diet. So thanks again for calling, guys.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Okay, bye-bye. You're listening to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network, powered by the Simply G Media Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show, powered by the Insightful Players series. You can go to insightfulplayer.com to find out more information on the Insightful Player and Coach Chrissy Carew. Fantastic how they've teamed up with different players in the NFL, former and current NFL players, that provide a fantastic message, and they also do school programs, so you got to go to insightfulplayer.com to purchase the book. And a very interesting person that I've interviewed many times, a big superstar of the Pittsburgh Steelers. I want to welcome the program Insightful Player, Pittsburgh Steeler Andy Russell. And Andy, it's kind of funny how I guess our roads cross again because of how I hooked up with Chrissy. So how are you, Andy?
I'm doing good, Neil, and I'm excited about being involved with the Insightful Players, and I want to give back to the community as best I can. And you know, so I'm very interested in working with young people.
And I'm hoping that we'll team up together, because I'm really teamed up with Chrissy, especially what Insightful Player is trying to do. And firsthand, we're right in Pittsburgh together, so what an opportunity to get to do that and work together again, especially thank you again for the opportunity of covering your celebrity golf tournament. It was just an unbelievable day to get to interview Art Rooney II, yourself, Dwayne Woodruff, and Rocky Blyer. You can't beat that. And a Hall of Famer. It was just an unbelievable day.
We'll do that again next year, too.
All right, excellent. I'll definitely put that on the calendar. So, Andy, kind of our listeners have learned a lot about you, but one thing that I just can't, I love to talk about is the Super Steelers. And we've talked about how you got involved in the NFL and how your career has led you. You always were focused on life after football. But I'm really interested to talk about, I guess, the character of playing football for the Steelers and playing under Art Rooney and learning so many specific things. And the Super Steelers, you were in a kind of a losing season type of mentality, and finally things kind of broke and then the Steelers started winning. So how did it feel finally with so many losing seasons to finally the resurgence of the Pittsburgh Steelers when you played for them and they really didn't win many games?
Well, you know, I really had a interesting kind of football experience in my whole... At high school, we won every game. You know, we had really great teams in St. Louis, Missouri. And then I played at Missouri University under Dan Devine, and we were always in the top 10 and even number one at times. So we had really good teams. I think we lost like 3 games in 3 years. So moving to the Steelers was quite interesting. In my first year, 1963, my rookie year, we almost won the championship.
Oh, really?
People forget that because we were 7-4. We had 4 ties, which is an unusual thing. But it put us into the final game of the year against the New York Giants, whom we had beaten in Pittsburgh. And we went into Yankee Stadium, and they beat us. And it was very disappointing because if we had gotten into that championship game, it was not called Super Bowl in those days, but it was a championship game, NFL championship game, and it would have been against the Chicago Bears, but we had tied 17-17. So we knew we could beat them. And so we were that close to a ring in 1963. Then 64 and 5, I was in Germany as a lieutenant in the Army, and I did play football over there in what they called division-level football. And that was quite a good experience, actually, because I coached the team and learned a lot more about the game by being a coach as well as playing, you know. So anyway, and then come back after the military, and all the great players that were there in 63 from the 50s, guys like Ernie Stotner, Hall of Famer,
right.
They were all gone. And the team was really in trouble with them. Just a severe lack of talent. I mean, they were very good guys. They worked hard, tried hard, but we didn't have the talent to win. So all of a sudden, we're you know, 2-12, 3-11. I mean, it was just awful.
And what do you think changed all that? Changed that winning attitude? Changed the way the team developed it? I did not know about the 63. I knew. I heard you on one of the sports radio stations talking about the assassination of JFK and all that. And that was a very fascinating history lesson. But the one thing I did not know was the Steelers were really good in 63. But after that time, what turned you guys around? What was that change? Because every sports team has that final or that first focus that changes the mentality of the team. What do you think was the biggest change when you were on that many losing teams?
The biggest change, it was Chuck Knoll. All of a sudden, we had this absolutely fantastic coach who just always told us the truth. I mean, you'll never forget his first speech to us. He said, I've been watching the game film since I took the job, and I can tell you guys why you've been losing. Well, you could have heard a pin drop in that room because we had a bunch of good guys who tried hard. And he said that the reason you've been losing is you're not any good. And I'm going to have to get rid of most of you.
Oh, my.
Well, five of us made it from that room to the Super Bowl, first Super Bowl, number 9. And that was quite an experience because he was bringing in all these wonderful players, you know. And all of a sudden, in the 60s, we had a higher draft. We had higher location of the draft choice. You know, we were closer to number 1, that kind of thing. But the guys wouldn't even make the team. They were not good players.
Oh.
For some reason, Knoll, he knew how to recruit. Okay, and, you know, Chuck Knoll just was a brilliant evaluator of talent, and maybe the greatest choice he ever made was Joe Green, who probably was the player of the decade for any team in the NFL. But then the next year we had, you know, Mike Wagner, Jack Ham, lots of really good players, and they got better and better. And then, of course, people know that 1974. They drafted, I think it was 4 or 5 Hall of Famers, which is unheard of.
Wow. And that's where it kind of really you're seeing that a winning mentality is coming in. People that really are buying into Chuck Knoll's system. So tell me how did Knoll, rejuvenate you in a way? Because, again, you keep losing, you work hard as a professional, but you also say, hey, when are we ever going to do anything again? He comes in, cleans house. What kind of person, how did he kind of direct you to be able to play with such fantastic players all around you? What do you think was that edge he gave you, or that idea, you know, you're good enough to play for me, but he had a specific message to tell you to go out and do?
Yeah, he was... Yeah, really a brilliant coach, and I'll never forget the first private meeting I had with him. He had called me in the off season and told me to come over to his office. He wanted to talk to me. And this is the first year he was hired, '69, and I actually was so naive. I went over there thinking he's going to compliment me for making my first Pro Bowl, which I had just previous to that, '68. So as I went over, he just directs me to sit down across from his desk, and he looks up at me and says, Russell, I've been watching the game films, and I don't like the way you play. He says, you're too aggressive. You're too out of control. You're trying to make the big play, and I'm going to have to change the way you play. You're going to play much smarter and be a better player in your 30s than you were in your 20s. And, you know, I knew he was right because when you're losing, you're running around trying to tickle this head cut off, trying to hit somebody or get something done or make a big play, and it doesn't work. You can't do that. You have to play your position, and you can't get out of position. And Noel was just and he always told the truth. I mean, he just nailed it.
Wow. And that's really interesting for someone to have that leadership quality to be able to tell somebody, you got to change the way you play. Because could you imagine some of these athletes today, someone coming in as a coach and telling them, you're going to change the way Coughlin, I heard Tom Coughlin had that kind of certain situation where he would tell the players the truth. And a lot of coaches massage everything and say, oh, everything's going to be fine. Then you end up, here's the door, instead of trying to mold you into the player you're going to be today. And it seems like Coach Knoll did that for you.
Yeah. He was a believer in success is in the details. And he wanted us to be able to not just be good athletes, but good techniques. But he wanted us to be able to anticipate what the opponent would do, and be pretty confident that we knew what they were going to do. And I started memorizing the previous 3 years of every opponent, and that worked. It worked for me. It was really a eye opener.
So Knoll was a great mentor to you, helping you in that process to get to become the player that you ended up becoming. Who else on the Steelers was great at helping mold you into the player you are that you were then at the best, at your highest level? Who would you say would be that?
The other captains. I mean, Sam. I was a captain for 10 years, and I'm proud of that. Sam Davis was a very good offensive lineman, and he also guided and talked with the offensive lineman. Ray Mansfield, my best Steeler buddy, who has passed away, but he was a very good communicator, and was always talking to his teammates about, you know, trying harder and making things work and so forth. So he was a very important guy. Rocky Blyer, you know, he was very inspirational, coming back from a wound in Vietnam.
Yeah.
So anyway, there's too many to go through. I mean,
yeah, and it goes back to your character as well, Andy, being willing to take their advice, being willing to step your game to the next level, and become one of the Super Steelers. That's the coolest thing in the world. But you were willing to, and that's the character that you have, be led at times to have success and be a team player.
Yeah, you know, Coach Knoll always, you know, can't get out of position. You can't be trying to, you can't try to help your buddies. You can't be over there trying to do their job. You got to do your job. And he made that clear, and we all started doing it. We discovered, like, one of our early years when we had a lot of talent. We lost, though, I think it was three out of our first four games. And, we discovered it was because the guys were trying to help out their buddies. You know, they were all over trying to make a play, you know, where they shouldn't have been. And so the opponent didn't dominate the field. They didn't make first downs. They just had big plays that beat us.
Yeah. And it's because you guys overextended yourself and weren't listening to one of the greatest coaches of all time. When we get back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the winning and how it felt to be a Super Bowl champion. And then we're going to go into, I guess, life after football and the fact of Andy writing books and how books have led to a lot of the help he's been able to help people. We've talked so much about his foundation and the great people he's working with, and we're going to talk and promote this year's Taste of the NFL and more about what Andy's team is going to do there at the Super Bowl. And it's really strange to say the Super Bowl will be in New York. We get back. You're listening to the Toleducation Celebrity Show on the Toleducation Network. You're going to be cold, Andy, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Toleducation Celebrity Show, powered by the Insightful Player series on the Simply G Media Network. You can go to insightfulplayer.com to find out more information on Coach Chrissy Carew and the great Insightful Players. And it's so amazing to learn about all these great NFL players are looking to give back. And Andy, it definitely goes back to one of the things I think that made the Pittsburgh Steelers, and that was the Chief. The Chief was another part of that puzzle that made you guys champions. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yes. I mean, the Chief was a wonderful guy. I mean, he would be at every practice, rain or snow, it didn't matter. He would be out there and be watching the practice, and then afterwards he'd come in the locker room and you know, pat you on the back and ask if you're okay, how's your injuries and that sort of thing. So he really cared about his players, and he got a very personal relationships with them, and I think it was you know, we just always felt like we were playing for a great organization, quality people, and you know, it makes you want to try even harder.
Now, tell us about when you finally won that Super Bowl. How did it feel?
Well, it felt almost unbelievable. I mean, you know, Ray Mansfield and I, who went through those bad '60s, you know, we kept saying, "Are we this good? I mean, is this possible?" We weren't sure. You know, we couldn't imagine being in a Super Bowl and then winning it. And but you know, going into that game, a lot of people, the media picked the Vikings, because they said the Steelers, this was their first time, the Vikings had already been there. Steelers would be very nervous about all the media pressure and so forth. And they have what's called a media day early in the week, and it's, you know, from 9 till noon or something. And we went to it, and the opposite occurred. It was really funny, actually, because they had tables for all the stars, you know, a table for Bradshaw and a table for Joe Green and, you know, those kind of guys. And they had a big table for Ray Mansfield and myself. And about halfway through the hour, everybody was at our table. Not because we were the big stars or because we were, but because we had these funny stories about the '60s and how bad we were. And the media loved it. And so at the very end, when they said, "Okay, it's time for you to go," and the media got up to go, Ray Mansfield said, "No, sit down. I have more stories to tell you."
and that's
so much for the media pressuring us to not be able to play.
And again, this was in New Orleans, if I'm correct. And this was before, yeah, there was no Superdome at this point. The Superdome was being built, and it was one of those cold weather games, right? Almost.
No, it was, yeah. I like cold weather to play in, because if you don't get tired. But it was also tricky. One of the really great things that happened, we had worn certain shoes for our artificial turf in Three Rivers, and they had worked. I won't go into the names of the shoes, but the ones we all used worked very well in Three Rivers. We went out on the field the morning of the game, or right before the game, the warm up, and we're slipping and sliding. We can't keep our feet. It's just ridiculous, and you can't play like that. Football, you need to get good footing. Anyway, we went into the locker room, and we're complaining about it, and the equipment manager Tony Parisi says, "Well, I got a whole bunch of shoes from a Canadian company, and I think they've got much more cleats and so forth, and I think they'll work." Sure enough, they did, and that could be a big reason we won.
Because it was a low scoring game for sure, and I remember this because, again, I was not, if I'm remembering the year, it was 74, right? 70, am I on the right year?
Yeah, it was the 74 season. The game was probably in January of 75.
I was about, yeah, I was 2 years old. So I just am just a great historian of the game, especially that time. And I was talking to somebody about the great character of Bud Grant as well. Bud Grant wrote a memoir, and I interviewed the co-author, and just a fascinating man as well. So two great coaches for that Super Bowl. What a matchup, Noel versus Grant, for sure.
Yeah, and I think the Viking coaches made some mistakes that were critical. Like for example, one of the things they did was run at Joe Green, and you know that was just that's the old school thing where you run at the opponent's strength and stand up to it. Well, that didn't work.
No, this team, and it's very interesting. I think there's somebody out there that's talked about it. They've asked lots of Super Bowl decade winners, and they think that you guys are tops, that no one ever could, the Super Steelers of the four Super Bowls, could ever top this team, these players. And I'm sure you agree with it as well, that you guys are the best team of any decade, for sure.
Well, I I think there's no other team that's got that did 4 out of 6 Super Bowls. So, you know, until somebody does that, then we'll compare them.
Exactly, for sure. So basically, winning that Super Bowl, an amazing thing. We've talked about athletes and how they celebrate championships. Very interesting. Roberto Clemente, we had Al Oliver on talking about Roberto and stuff. And I like always bring up this Pittsburgh connection, because that's the key thing that you guys all Pittsburghers love all Pittsburgh sports. It's such a great community, and if you play for one team, you're following what's going on in the other. And Roberto, when he won the World Series in 60, he celebrated with the fans. So what did Andy Russell do that night at the Super Bowl? Was it like kind of hanging out and just celebrating like crazy? And who did you hang out with and all that stuff after winning the Super Bowl?
Well, the Steelers had a major party that was primarily for the players and their families. So we weren't really out with our fans. But I know Ray and I went out after the big party and on the Bourbon Street, and you know, there were a lot of Steelers fans yelling and shouting, and so it was great to be with them. I've always said we have the best fans in the world.
You do,
Pittsburgh Steelers, and of course the Pirates and the thing was it's just amazing how they've supported us, and they even supported us pretty good in the 60s when we were bad.
Right.
Occasionally they threw snowballs at us, but, you know.
So you win the two Super Bowls, and how did you finally decide you're going to retire? That's another tough situation to say, I'm going to hang it up, especially hearing your passion in your career and having success that you did as an NFL player. To say I'm going to say goodbye to this game, that must have been hard.
Well, people sometimes say, what did you do after football? Well, I had started my business in 1969, my own business called Russell Investments. And I was syndicating deals for Wall Street. And the first year, 1969, I made more money than the Steelers were paying me.
Right.
And my wife said, "Why don't you retire? You could get hurt." You know, I said, "No, it's a passion. I want to, you know, maybe I want to see if we can win half our games someday." And of course, we did a lot better than that. And I retired in '76. But I would go to business meetings at the Duquesne Club before practice, after practice. Mondays, you know, it was 24/7, because I realized I couldn't do it just after the in the off season. I had to do it year round, and so I was getting where the business was being so big that I had to focus on it and I had to take care of it. And that's part of it. Now the other part of it is that, you know, I was in 14 years, and you get beat up pretty well after, you know, you've broken all your fingers, you've broken your thumbs, you've hurt every single joint in your body, you know, badly, and then you realize that, and you can't quite play the way you used to be able to, because you lost a step, you just can't, you know, and you're much more susceptible to more injuries. So Ray Mansell and I just decided that, okay, we're just be our best year, 1976, and we'll see if we can win 3 in a row. And, you know, we almost did it, but didn't quite get it done. And we retired, and I think we both discovered some other things to replace football, which were quite exciting, too.
Yeah, you're a fantastic entrepreneur who, again, started before Life After Football. But when it comes to Andy Russell writing books and sharing with people, I've noticed that you've written a few books and different things telling about the days of the Steelers and your life and different aspects. How difficult or was it to transition to be an author? And is it hard to say, you know, especially to talk about yourself a lot? It seems like you're always looking and talking, and that's what insightful players are in my mind. They're thinking of others more than themselves, and they're looking and they're very humble. And Andy, the first time I talked to you, I see that you're such a humble person. And that goes back to the character growing up that we can go back to other interviews and check out. But being an author, was that difficult to put it all on paper and put it into books?
Well, I really have enjoyed writing my books. The first one was a Steeler Odyssey, then an Odd Steeler's Journey. I called it that because Jack Ham told me that that's what I should have named the first one. Instead of a Steeler Odyssey, I should have called it a Hot Steeler's Journey. And that was the second book. And then the third book was Beyond the Goalpost. And most of those stories, well, in the first few books, there's a lot of stories about what it was like being a Steeler and all the experiences we had in winning various games, winning Super Bowls, things like that. Yeah, the challenge of the game itself. And then there was also in the Steeler Odyssey a lot of chapters about some of the great players, you know, the Franco chapter, Jack Gamb chapter, and so forth. And I talked about in great detail why they were such great players. And I had fun doing that, and I enjoyed it. Also talking about my own challenges where, I made a big mistake or something. Nobody's perfect. You gotta play that game the best you can, and sometimes you're going to struggle. I had to admit that. So it was fun to kind of just write about it. People say I should be in a fame. I'm not going to worry about that. That's for other people to decide, and I'm not really interested in discussing that.
Well, let's hope it happens someday. Because again, you were part of one of the greatest teams of all time. You were a great Pittsburgh Steeler, and again, look at how you help charitably and all these different things. So tell me, I got two more questions pretty much before we run out of time, and I appreciate you taking the time. Again, we're talking to Andy Russell, Super Steeler. The first one is specifically enough about taste for the NFL. How our listeners, you can explain a little bit to them again every year what happens, and then we're going to talk about being an insightful player.
Yeah, Taste of the NFL is a event that it's my 17th year, and Ray Mansfield had done it 4 or 5 years before that, and it's to stop hunger in America. It's based in Minneapolis, but it's an annual party at the Super Bowl, and they call it a party with a purpose, and it's to raise as much money as possible to give to the food banks at all 32 cities. There's 32 teams in the NFL. And what the party is a lot of fun because it has a top chef from every city, every NFL city, and one ex-former player like myself, where I've been representing the Steelers. And it's kind of amazing because the Steelers always have the longest line. And it has nothing to do with me. It has to do with the Steelers. They people get in line for the Steelers. It's not the food. Maybe, he's doing pierogies or whatever. But it's because they're the best fans in the world. And we have an annual contest, which is called the Kick Hunger Challenge. And, fans want to get into their internet and go to Taste the NFL. They'll see the Kick Hunger Challenge, and they could put in, if $10 is worth 80 meals,
wow,
it'll buy 80 meals. So every little bit would be very significant if people could help. I think it's a wonderful charitable effort. But there's also another little contest they have, which is a helmet contest. And they have each player sign his helmet, and then you auction it off. Well, I've won that helmet contest the last 4 years. Why? Well, it's not because I'm the most famous guy there. I mean, Bart Starr is there. All these Hall of Famers are there, 18 Hall of Famers. But it's because I get a pre-bid from a friend who is a fundraiser extraordinaire for Economics Pennsylvania, which is also one of my big charitable efforts that I really feel strongly about. Teaching our young people the natural literacy. We won that helmet contest, and I bet you couldn't guess your wildest imagination what Fritz Heinemann was able to sell that helmet for. Now, I added Jack Ham and Jack Lambert's signature. Your wildest imagination that helmet would go for?
Okay, I'm going to go with, let's say, signed $10,000.
Nope, it was $100,000.
Oh my gosh! Wow, that's
he sold $51,000 lottery tickets for the helmet. And then one guy said, if you can pull this off, I'll double it.
Oh, wow. That's tremendous.
It's got to be the most money any you know, football memorabilia buff has ever paid for an NFL helmet.
Amazing. Definitely amazing. And one of the amazing things about you, Andy, is and when I heard you're an insightful player, I said to Chrissy, I said, wow, he definitely belongs in that category. And I've interviewed about 20 or about 10 of them so far, and they all are just tremendous guys giving back to the community and are true givers and are truly understand what they did in the NFL and how they want to help others. But when Chrissy asked you to be an insightful player, how does it feel to be an insightful player?
Well, I was honored to be invited to join that group because I think it's right down the line of what we set up our Russell Charitable Foundation to do is just to help children and to get advice if we can, all kinds of things that we do for various children throughout our state, but also throughout the country.
Yeah, it definitely aligns to it, and such great players for sure, and such unbelievable ones. And Andy, as I said off air, we're going to definitely work together to try to get what Chrissy's doing in the schools in Pittsburgh for sure. And hopefully we can be working together on this in 2014, because I think that what she's doing, how she is able to help youth is fantastic. And both of us are very well connected in the Pittsburgh area involved with schools, and let's try to make that work. But also, where can our listeners find out more information on you and your foundation and everything? What website?
Okay. Our foundation is, I don't know how many years old it is. My wife is sitting next to me here on our car, and what do you think, Sid? 15 years old, and we have our annual golf tournament that raises the money for it, along with UPMC. They are very helpful, and we give money to the UPMC Concussion Center. We give, as I said before, money to Economics Pennsylvania, and we give, my wife is a huge animal lover. She's on the board of Animal Friends and the Zoo, and we give money to both of those because we love animals. And a lot of other, various things.
And that's
Wounded Warriors, and so it's hard for us to get the amount of money up there where it can sustain itself because we're spending too much of it.
And the website is for our listeners. Where do you go?
The website is andyrussell.org.
Yeah, and you do a tremendous golf tournament. And for our Pittsburgh listeners or anywhere in the country, if you're a golfer, this is awesome. I'm telling you, I observed a lot of it. I interviewed some fantastic athletes, but to reserve your spot to get to golf with these great legends. They just give back. They're just so awesome. I remember Thursday night at the cocktail and auction and how willingness to talk to people, and you definitely pick the right people to come to this tournament every year.
Yeah, we have a great list of contributors and donors who have just been fantastic. And they come to our gala the Thursday night before, which is always at the Heinz Field clubs, and they play the golf tournament the following day, and that's also tremendous contribution. So we really appreciate it.
Okay, Andy, good talking to you. Safe travels in your trip, and we'll definitely stay in touch, and we'll hook up in a couple months to kind of have you back on to get us some updates and promote the tournament. So good talking to you, man.
Yeah, good talking to you, Neil, and appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, I am always love to. And I'd bring you on a monthly just to talk about the Steelers, because I think you'd definitely need to look at writing the book with Triumph Books. I'm going to have to go to Triumph and say, you got to write this one about 100 things you need to do before you die as a Steeler fan. They did one for a lot of teams. I don't think they've done it for the Steelers yet. I'm going to have to reach out. That you'd be the man to write that for sure. But good talking to you.
Thank you. Okay, good
talking to you. All right, see you, Andy. Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
You're listening to the Toll Education Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Toll Education Celebrity Show and the Toll Education Network, powered by the Simply G Media segment. Go to my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. And also, you can check out SimplyG.com to find out more information on G.J. Reynolds, the playful and powerful warrior. And I'm really excited to welcome the program. And it's, I guess we are kind of been in the same biz in some way. I think that MMA is definitely related to world wrestling, wrestling in certain aspects, because of just specifically one, I guess, is real, while the other one considers not to be real, but it really is painful. But so we have a kind of a shared background in certain ways. I want to welcome the program Jessica Sutton, MMA World Series of Fighting ring girl, celebrity. Jessica, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, good. So basically, when you talk about MMA and you talk about professional wrestling, even though they're different in certain aspects, I think that they gather about the same type of crowd. Wouldn't you agree? That watch wrestling and MMA? I think so.
Absolutely.
You know, they're into the unbelievable athletes and the whole different thing. Did you ever think you'd be a ring girl when you first started in your life and your career, and saying, you know what, this is something I want to do in my life? Did you ever think you'd be a ring girl?
You know, I never really paid a lot of attention, to be honest with you. MMA, you know, when I was coming up in the modeling world, it wasn't as big as it is today. And, I was a ring girl for a brief time for the Golden Gloves Boxing Association in Buffalo, New York. That was kind of my first glimpse at it, and I fell in love with it, so here I am.
So started there, and then you went to where, I guess, one of the most popular sports out there, MMA, isn't it? So it's and once you became one, you really gained a huge fan following, didn't you, because of how many people love this sport?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool, cool. And from that process, when you first tried out, were you amazed to see specifically the fan following of that sport and how many people were into it and stuff? Were you ever a fan of it before you tried out?
You know what? I wasn't like an avid viewer, but my younger brother and my little cousin, they both do jiu-jitsu, and they were very into the MMA world. So I definitely knew about it. But I was definitely surprised. You know, my first set of fights, you know, I debuted ringside. I was really surprised at how taken I was to it. You know, the amount of training, the discipline, and the respect that these guys have, I mean, I was just enthralled, you know, from the second. And, you know, since being a ring girl, I actually am an avid viewer now. I watch the UFC and some of the Bellator as well, so... And it's definitely grown for sure.
And it's amazing how dangerous a sport it is and how, again, it's controlled in a certain aspect. Think of how many deadly weapons are in that ring. I mean, with the wrestling.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And these fighters, you know, some of them, unfortunately, will face lifetime, you know, lifetime repercussions from fighting. You know, imagine getting a kick to the head or getting knocked out, you know. Your brain is without oxygen. That does some serious damage later on in life. So hats off to these guys.
And just think, they work their way up. They make money once they get to the big time. When they're doing the small circuit, they're getting beat up and coming home with hardly anything until they get discovered in certain
ways. Absolutely.
It's just
absolutely
like boxing in so many ways. What would you say, and I think that seems like you are very passionate about this now after being part of it and watching it and being part of the MMA. Why do you think it's got a huge following, yet again, it's still not covered like boxing? What do you think the reason is? It covered like by the major sports world, and, you know, there's still doubters out there about it, you know?
You know, when you think about anything in life, I think society as a whole, we're very old-fashioned, we're traditional. When MMA came out, it was something that was never done before. You know, you have so many different aspects to it. You have the boxing within it. You have the wrestling. You know, you have the submissions. And I feel like it's something that, because it's not broadcasted like boxing is, I feel like people just, they're, like myself, they're a little ignorant to the sport, and they're like, oh, these guys, they're not really. But if somebody would actually sit down and take the time to watch one of these fights and really try and gauge what these guys do, I feel like America you know, and the whole world in general would fall in love with the sport and with the athletes that are affiliated with it.
But it's making tons of money. Pay-per-view's huge. It kind of reminds me of NASCAR. It has its cult following, but it's a huge cult following, yet it doesn't get the coverage it needs. Would you agree?
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, and I think that's going to come with time, you know, like with anything. You know, let's look back on the WNBA. I mean, WNBA, it's still not what the NBA is, but, you know, there are doubters and there are haters and there are people that just are ignorant to the sport. I think after time, you know, and a lot of these guys, they're making a name for themselves. You know, Nick Newell, I don't know if you're familiar with Nick Newell. He's one of our signed fighters, and he was born with one limb.
Oh, my.
So he has one arm. And this guy, he's doing more than just fighting. You know, he's got a whole following. He's, you know, encouraging these kids who are born with the same, you know, problem to reach for their dreams. So I feel like this sport, it's going to get bigger, you know, and they're doing a lot more than just fighting in that cage.
And it goes back to specifically, well, how do they do this? How do we keep it safe in certain aspects? And how there are doubters, because, again, you know that when I mentioned I was a part of professional wrestling, professional wrestlers do not want to see the sport keep growing because, again, it's real, unlike pro wrestling that's staged, and that it's very dangerous. And a lot of these guys that are in pro wrestling that have segued to MMA in certain aspects because of, I guess, the opportunity to truly be in a sport. Think about some of them that were in professional wrestling. I wrestled Dan D. Severn, and he was a huge UFC fighter, and Brock Lesnar, and all these different people have transitioned from wrestling over. I'm sure that Vince McMahon, and you don't have to mention this, Jessica, or any of the other promoters are constantly trying to get them in trouble any event that happens, saying, you know, they don't have a certain protection or certain things because they don't want to see a competition out there. And there's definite competition between pro wrestling and MMA. Don't you agree?
Absolutely.
So you're going to hear the naysayers, you're going to hear the different things, and it's not going to get in the mainstream, but so many people love it. And I guess the process of traveling all the time, it must be unbelievable to be part of this and to know, hey, I'm going to be on TV all the time and people see me. And once you, that was your big break, wasn't it? Getting this gig, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? Entering the competition that I did to get this spot, I didn't even realize how big this company was going to be. It's been a ride for sure, an unbelievable one. And, you know, it's kind of put me in a position to be able to influence, you know, other people and essentially touch people's lives, which for me is the best part of my job.
So from your success, you see that you got to pay it forward. What ways are you thinking about doing that, Jessica, with now this building this opportunity and getting more and more popular? What are you trying to share to your fans and your followers?
I mean, honestly, essentially, all I want to do is I really just want to encourage people to look past any adversity that they've had in their lives and to realize that anything that they want, they can really achieve. Like, you know, I say this over and over again in interviews that, you know, the only limitations that we have in our life are the ones that we set on ourselves. And, you know, I'm a firm believer in that because, you know, growing up, I didn't have the easiest life and there were a lot of things that I thought I couldn't do. And once I saw that I could and I gained a little more confidence and a little more confidence, you know, I've done things that I never thought would be possible. And I believe that that's true for everyone out there. And I really, you know, the kids especially, we're brought up in a society today where it's all about monetary, it's all about things, you know, from the advertisements on TV
right.
to advertisements in the magazines. And I just want people to know that at the end of the day, money is not the bottom line. Find what you're passionate about, go after it, and it's yours. You know, it's that simple and it's that hard.
Focus on your dreams. Jessica, we as a society constantly say, well, what's going to pay us? But what's going to make us truly feel like we're helping people? We're truly providing something for them. And I think that, and providing a platform. I think a lot of times what we do is we constantly focus on how many dollars am I going to make, not how many people am I going to transform their lives? How many people am I going to give them that hope and that encouragement that they can do? not, I'm stuck. I never can make it anywhere. And I think it's a great message, Jessica.
Yeah, absolutely. And I totally agree with you. You know, it seems so simple, but, you know, I think that's where we fall short. And I think that's where we need to change. You know, I asked myself about a year ago, you know, when is the last time that we really had an influential woman or man for that matter? You know, like, who's the Rosa Parks of today? Who's the Jackie O of today? You know, we're just so focused on the materialistic things and the physical aspect, and we need to just give back to each other and help each other out and get back to that old school mentality, you know, love thy neighbor. And if we do that, we'll be stronger as individuals and as a nation, you know?
Absolutely. What current projects are going on with you, Jessica? I know that you're talking about ones in the wraps that soon will be up, but again, this syndicated interview will continue to air probably by the time everything's going. So you can announce whatever you would like to announce on this show, because again, when you go into the radio archives, it never dies forever. I'm playing stuff years later. So what are the latest projects going on, so our listeners can kind of check you out and stuff? What's going on with you?
So currently I am in the middle of creating a YouTube channel of all of my home improvement projects, something that I'm incredibly, incredibly passionate about. I love tools. I would rather have tools than shoes than jewelry. It's kind of weird, but it's what makes me tick. But anyway, my first project that I decided to film was actually completely ripping out the shower fitter in my master bathroom and building my own custom shower pan, tiling the walls, and all that. So right now the videos are being edited, and there should be a few up actually within the next 2 days or so.
Well, by the time it airs, it'll definitely be up there. So that's a great place. Where is that? Can we go to your website to find that, or at a YouTube channel?
So, yeah, you can go to www.jesssutton.com, and there will be a slot called The Real Tool Time. That's the title of my YouTube channel. And the videos will be directly uploaded on that site. And then YouTube, you can just search my name, and it should pop up as well.
Well, I could see through this platform in MMA. You're going to go for you have some big career aspirations. I could tell. You start out with YouTube, start doing some more things, and that could lead to ultimately your dream job. What would you say your dream job is, Jessica?
You know, it's funny. I try to like figure this out and think about this long and hard, and honestly, like, you know, I definitely want to be a ring girl as long as I can. I love it. You know, I'm crazy about the sport. It's great to have the fan base. But I really would love to just be able to do something with home improvement and design. I mean, I love it. Like, I just listened to this book on tape called The Hero. I don't know if you're familiar with it. Rhonda Burns wrote it. She's the same creator of The Secret. And basically, it's about finding your passion in life, your calling. And, you know, she talks about how, like, sometimes the vision that we have in our mind is not the plan that's for us, but through that and through the path that we take, we'll eventually get to where we're supposed to be. So, I mean, I'm not really sure exactly where I want to go with this. I just know that I want to be in a position to be able to reach out, especially to children. One of the things that really helped me in high school was I remember sitting down in, like, three-hour-long auditorium assemblies where, like, the convicts would come in and sit down and talk to us about life experiences and like what not to do and what to do. And, you know, I would love to be in a position where I could get up in a room full of kids and just touch them with my story and urge them to chase their dreams. And so
don't ever give up that.
Hopefully that killed me for the hammer in my pocket. I don't know.
Don't ever give up on that dream. And I love the understanding, and that's a great branding. I tell you right now, Jessica, I think that, and I know you have the right team in place, but any way I can help, to get that out there. Because again, you took the platform of MMA, you now could have to show a woman who is handy, which I'm not handy at all, Jessica. So I think that you could really create a huge following through this. So YouTube is where everything goes viral, and you never know, you could have your own show, and I'll be watching you and say, but that's what you got it. That you have to set the bar high. If you don't set the bar high for yourself, Jessica, then forget about it. Some of the celebrities I've interviewed in the last 2 months, I'm just absolutely blown away, and I keep saying I want to set the bar even higher. And that's what you have to do for yourself as well, and don't have anyone tell you you can't do it. And I know you're going to do it. And if that's your passion, focus on that, and you'll get there. So I wish you all the luck in the world. Again, your website for our listeners again?
It's www.jesssutton.com.
All right. Well, best of luck to you, and I'll tweet it out when it airs on syndication, and we'll stay in touch, and we'll see where you go from here. I know it's going to be big, so look forward to talking to you.
All right, great. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. Take care. Okay.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Toll Education Celebrity Show, powered by the Simply G Media Network, and we'll be back in just a moment.